it's easy to forget that that running should be simple. It's easy to forget that there's beauty in every run.
Diz Runs Radio, wait for it, y'all. Episode 500! Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, today's episode of the show is brought to you by the good folks over at Health IQ, who have worked with life insurance companies to offer folks who are fairly well health conscious a lower price on life insurance. And as runners, we fall into the category of being health conscious, of having a decreased mortality risk than the general population. So, as the year's drawn to a close, you might be thinking maybe reassessing kind of what kind of life insurance needs you might have. And if you think that you might need to add a little bit of coverage there to help take care of your spouse, your kids, your dependents, anybody else that would rely on your income if something should happen to you, and you think maybe it's time. Maybe I need to up that life insurance amount that I have, head over to healthiq.com/dizruns, get yourself more information, and also get yourself a quote, and just see how much you can actually save simply by being a runner. So healthiq.com/dizruns, thank you to them for supporting the show, and thank you to you for supporting them, who makes their continued support possible. But now, without any further ado, episode 500, eh? Let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is someone that you're probably familiar with, even if you don't necessarily realize it, because he was a regular columnist and also editor-at-large for Runner's World magazine a decade ago and for a number of years in those various positions. He also still writes regularly for Runner's World, and his work has appeared in several other outlets as well. Additionally, he's also written 4 books about running and created the Dumb Training Journal, and he's also the brains behind everything that goes on over at dumbrunner.com. He was also, for those of you that have been around for a long time, he was also the first person to agree to be interviewed for this very podcast back in 2014. And I thought it'd be cool to catch back up with him on episode 500. So only 499 episodes later, here we are again. So without any further ado, it is definitely a pleasure to be able to welcome Mark Remy back to the show. So thanks for taking the time out of your schedule and joining us for round 2 today. Mark, appreciate it.
Hi, I'm happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. The pleasure is mine. And guys, if you want to connect with Mark, if you're not already part of his world, the places to do so, best places, dumbrunner.com is the website. Lots of fun stuff there. And on the Twitter, you can connect with him at RealDumbRunner, all one word jumbled together. And on Facebook, just search for Dumb Runner. You can even just go facebook.com/dumbrunner, and the page will pop up, the group. You can connect and see all the different things that are going on. And if you want to listen to a train wreck of a podcast host back in the day, dizruns.com/001 will take you back to the original. Mark was good. I was a hot mess, but you might still think I'm a hot mess, but that's a discussion for another day. But that was the original, and the show notes for this episode, if you want to, any of the links or anything that we reference that makes sense to link to, we'll have all those things hooked up at dizruns.com/500 for this episode. So Mark, the way we always start the show is actually hasn't changed in 500 episodes. I was kind of surprised to realize that I started with this, but it's still the same question, and you know, we'll kind of see where you go with it. I might throw you a little curveball depending on your answer, but the question is still the same, and it's just simply, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Oh man, I think if I had to guess, I'm afraid I don't remember my answer to that. when you first asked me so many episodes ago. I'm going to guess I said half marathon, and that would be my answer today as well. And just because half marathon, I think, is just is this sweet spot of being long enough to be challenging for sure, but short enough that training for one and racing and one and recovering from one won't completely dominate your life and leave you wrecked. So I'm a big fan of the half marathon for sure. Still.
Yeah, that was pretty much where we ended up last time as well. So yeah. The answer hasn't changed much. A little curveball time then. What would be your least favorite distance to race if you had to pick one?
My least favorite distance to race. I'm not sure if I have a least. Oh gosh. I feel like I'm talking about my kids, you know, like I want to be the pet. I love all of the race distances equally, which is not true, of course. But I honestly, that's a real head scratcher. I sincerely am having a hard time answering it. I mean, I'm tempted to say 5K because they hurt so much. Mm-hmm. But you know, the 5K, like any other race, it's, you know, it hurts just as much as you want it to.
Right.
Which is kind of the beauty of running, but also that's what makes it so devilish, right? Like you can make any race distance, as easy or as hard as you want to, depending on your effort and how much you're willing to hurt and for how long. You know, I don't know.
That's fair. I mean, it's
and yeah, I have to say, if I had more racing experience, like in terms of breadth of experience, I might have a quicker answer to that question. I've never really raced a mile, for example. I've certainly never raced anything below a mile. If I did, I have a hunch that those might be my least favorite because that sounds, I mean, I have done my share of, you know, intervals and repeats and so on various tracks. And I can't say I've ever really enjoyed those.
Right.
That's kind of like pain distilled to its essence, you know? Half marathon favorite, least favorite. I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I was kind of thinking, and I've long been on the record of saying that, you know, I'd rather run a marathon than a 5K, in part because of what you said. You know, it's
sure.
It hurts so much for such a short period of time, but the pain is so much in the 5K. And then you might argue that, you know, the marathon actually hurts longer, but you just, you know, get more of the race that you actually can just kind of relax and enjoy yourself. But when you were kind of hemming and hawing a little bit, I was thinking, you know what, like each race does have its own merits. Like there is just a little sliver of me that does kind of, you know, and I feel sacrilegious almost saying this, but like does kind of like the 5K as much as I don't have much desire to race them. There is something about just that maximal effort, you know, when you're trying to push yourself for 20 ish minutes and seeing what happens.
For sure. Yeah. So, absolutely.
Yeah. It's, you know, always different sides of the coin and different, you know, different people like different things. It's also funny when somebody's like, yeah, I just love the 5K, but anything longer than, you know, any of the long distance races like the 10K, they're just so hard for me. And I'm like, yeah, well that's kind of just for, I feel like I'm starting to get warmed up and getting ready to go.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the older I get, the more time I find I need to warm up. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. This is something I was kind of surprised we didn't talk about before, but you know, as I always go with the wind, you know, sometimes you talk about it, sometimes you don't. What's your running history like? I mean, obviously you've been in the sport for a while, 26, 27 marathons you've run, who knows how many halves and the whole nine yards, working in mm-hmm. Runner's World, doing Dumb Runner, all these things that are related to running. How'd you get started in the sport?
I got started accidentally, actually. I'll try to give you the relatively short version of the long story, but yeah, the short version basically is that I used to be a road cyclist, starting in kind of early in high school. Actually, I got into road cycling and century rides, 100 milers, you know, things like that. And I dabbled in racing as well, road racing on my bike. That was like my identity for a number of years, actually. So I was like big into cycling for like a good like 11, 12 years, starting as a teenager. And it was kind of late in my career as a cyclist that a couple things happened. One, I gradually found myself getting a little burned out on cycling, just because I've been doing it so long and everything else. And at the same time, I accidentally realized that, hey, there's this thing called running, you know, I kind of got into it over the winter one year. I was born and raised in South Central Ohio, so the winters were pretty brutal. I tried to ride all year, but it could get really dicey with the snow and ice and stuff. So I was doing some cross training in the off season and just kind of, you know, started running through this guy at the local YMCA named Denny. Denny was an older guy, like he had a daughter my age, for example. So he was like a kind of father figure mentor to me, whether I realized it at the time or not. And yeah, basically he kind of like took me under his wing and got me running. And I realized, A, that I kind of enjoyed it in a warped way, and B, I was kind of good at it, you know, almost right away, you know, and certainly better at it than I was with cycling. Have you ever seen the movie, I don't know how you feel about Adam Sandler, but have you ever seen Happy Gilmore?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right? Okay, so for me, cycling was Happy Gilmore's hockey. You know, and running was the golf. Yeah, it's just I love cycling so much and for so long, and it's all I wanted to do. But you know, honestly, I was a much better fit for running. So over time, I sort of just gradually went from being a cyclist who sometimes runs to a runner who sometimes bikes. Mm. And you know, before I knew it, I was just a flat out runner, basically, and it kind of went from there. And you know, everything kind of gelled, I guess, once I was in a runner's world, which happened. It was just total serendipity and happenstance and dumb luck. But yeah, once I was in there, it was kind of like, you know, the die was cast. And now, like, running, you know, if I wasn't a runner before, I certainly was then. And it kind of, you know, changed the course of my life, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. Not just personally, but professionally. And here we are today.
Yeah, definitely. With the cycling background, I don't know exactly how to ask this, so I'll just kind of, you know, throw it out there and see kind of how the question actually ends up being formed. But
yes, I stayed my legs.
that wasn't going to be it, but now we got that little nugget to play with as well.
Right.
But with the cycling background, how much do you think that so here's where I'm going with it. You know, the cross training aspect. You know, all the experts, all the coaches, all the physiologists, you know, everybody seems to say that, you know, running is great, but do some other things once in a while. It's going to help you. It's going to help improve your performance, save some wear and tear, work some other muscle groups, yada, yada, yada.
Sure.
With the cycling background, I mean, you've had some, you know, 15 years ago, with the PRs that are posted on your website, they're pretty darn impressive. You know, 16 something in the 5K, 2:46 in the marathon. You know, do you think that the cycling fitness played a role in that? And if so, well, we'll start there and then we'll kind of see where it goes.
Sure. Yeah, I absolutely do, but maybe not for the reasons you're thinking. So I tend to be kind of, I wouldn't say old school exactly, but I'm kind of a, you know, crotchety, cranky, curmudgeonly guy when it comes to training and nutrition and all that stuff. For running, I'm not a huge believer personally in cross training, which might sound, you know, kind of heretical as well. I don't really cross train anymore. I mean, I certainly still bike, mostly just to get around and this transportation, which I find very satisfying. I don't schedule in, you know, cross training days. I understand a lot of people do and it works for them. And I think that's brilliant. I think it's probably smart actually, but I've never claimed to be a smart person, you know? So when it comes to running, I'm one of these old cranky guys who says, like, who thinks, you know, if you want to get in shape for running, you should run, you know? Mm-hmm. That said, my best advice for anybody who wants to get into running today as a total newbie is to be a cyclist for 12 years first, which is kind of tongue in cheek, but it's, I do believe for real that the time that I spent, you know, all those miles, all those hours and, on my bike, during my formative years, absolutely laid such a great foundation for me. And I'm not just talking about, you know, things like muscles and cardio and, you know, the physiological nuts and bolts stuff. I mean, just mentally. I mean, you know, like I said, I grew up in central Ohio where, you know, the summers were brutally hot and humid and the winters were brutally cold and icy and snowy. And I was out there, man, training for these 100-milers pretty much year round, you know, unless the roads were just totally impassable. I bundled up and I still remember putting, this is before I had a lot of, gear or discretionary income, obviously, but I remember as a teenager putting, bread wrappers over my socks and under my cycling shoes, you know, to, you know, in January, February to get out there so my feet wouldn't freeze. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was out there slogging through that stuff, man. And that, you know, so just mentally, I think it helped as well. So, of course, how could it not have helped? You know, by the time I shifted into running, I had this, you know, this terrific aerobic base of fitness and this a certain amount of, you could call it grit if you want to, I don't know, mental fortitude or whatever. And that absolutely helped, you know. I mean, you know, you're my pain threshold, if nothing else, was relatively high by then. So right. That's, for me, that's half the battle with running is just, you know, pushing the pain threshold a little higher every time. So yeah, I think it helped. But cross training wise in the traditional sense, I'm not sure if I would say that exactly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally does. And I think that one of the things that really stands out from that is that just the reminder, and I think it's something that I hope we all know, but sometimes it's easy to get lost in the shuffle, is that there's no one right way or wrong way. There's just kind of your way. And if your way works for you, like if your body can't stand or breaks down from running all of the time, then maybe some cross training, some things like that, some less wear and tear is a good thing.
Absolutely. I can't agree with that hard enough. And you know, and I've tried over the years, and for some reason, the older I get, the harder I try to do this, is to really, you know, beat this drum of like, you know, don't let anybody tell you, you know, that you're doing it wrong, or there's one way to do it and your way is not the right way, or this, I don't know, this kind of rigid prescriptive mentality really gets at me. And I'm really not a fan of that at all. You know, I mean, there are a few broad guidelines that can and should guide you with your training and your running and your racing, but they're just that, they're broad guidelines, you know. And beyond that, there's a real danger in overthinking stuff and, you know, seeing something, hearing something, reading something, and thinking like, you know, letting these nagging doubts kind of creep in and like, oh gosh, you know, maybe I should never eat these 9 foods, you know. Oh my God, I ate 2 of these foods just last week. Oh my God, you know, and freaking out. It's like, no, just relax, man. Just, you know, this stuff is not that complicated, or it shouldn't be anyway.
Right. Yeah. We overcomplicate the simple
sometimes. Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of broad guidelines. What are the couple of broad guidelines that you kind of follow with your training?
Oh gosh. So, time for a shameless plug maybe. So on my website, dumbrunner.com, which you were kind enough to mention at the outset, I wrote an article, almost a year ago, back in January, called The Only 3 Things You Need to Know to Begin Running, really, in parentheses. Because a lot of stuff that I write, most of the stuff I write, frankly, on Dumb Runner is jokey or satirical or tongue-in-cheek, but this one is not, you know. And this was kind of in response to the stuff I alluded to a minute ago when I said, you know, we're just bombarded these days with, especially with social media, man, with clickbait and links and posts and articles and everything else that collectively just drill home this message that you're effing up, you know, you're doing it wrong, you know, and I actually called up the article here. So I just had like some examples, you know, like 4 treadmill mistakes you need to avoid, you know, why runners should do Pilates. You know, the word should is always a red flag for me. 5 training mistakes every runner makes at some point. And it goes on and on and on and on. And it's just relentless and it can really wear you down. So kind of in response to that, I wrote this post titled, yeah, all you need to know to begin running, really. And there are 3 broad guidelines. One is just go. You know, stop thinking about running. Stop worrying if your shoes are adequate or not. Stop worrying if you're wearing exactly the right number of layers or the right whatever. You know, just go. Just put on some shoes, go out the door and start. You know, number 2 is just be patient, which means exactly what it says. Be patient. You know, don't expect instant results. You're not going to get them. And that's one of running's great lessons, I think, is teaching you how to cultivate patience. And the third and final one is simply pay attention, you know, and that can take any number of forms. It means paying attention to your body while you're running. You know, if something hurts or doesn't feel quite right, you know, back off, slow down, make an adjustment, try again, you know. Pay attention to your surroundings, you know, not just for safety's sake, like with cars and other hazards, but also just pay attention to the world around you, you know, because a brilliant thing about running is that it gets you out into the world, you know, away from social media and all those headlines that we just talked about and all the other madness, you know, it's you and the world. And there's, you know, it's easy to forget that there's a big, beautiful world out there, but there is. And, you know, running can show you that, but you need to pay attention to it first, you know, and you know, and pay attention as well to things like where you started and where you are today and where it is you want to go next. You know, so as I say in the article, it's a cliche, but running really is a journey, you know, and it's this amazing thing, but you need to pay attention to acknowledge that. And that's it, you know, just go, be patient, pay attention. For me, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and it's you know, I feel like I'm going to repeat myself, which, you know, wouldn't be the first time. But, you know, like I said just a few minutes ago, we just overcomplicate some things that are just so simple. And that's really, I mean, that dials it all down or boils it all down to the basic of it. So it's a good couple of guidelines to follow. And you know, the only three things that you really do need to know about running, it's perfect. It really is.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I want to get more into the writing side of your life, both the website and, you know, all the dumb running type or dumb runner type of things and the books and all that kind of stuff. But first, real quick, want to pay a bill. Just want to thank the folks from Health IQ for sponsoring today's episode. You know, not always the most exciting thing to talk about, you know, the maybe relative need for life insurance, because it's one of those things that doesn't pay out until you're not there to collect. But, you know, depending on what your family situation is, your life situation is, you might need to look at or might want to look at what kind of life insurance coverage you have. And the cool thing about Health IQ, what they do is they look at a bunch of different companies and try to figure out, you know, as runners, like we're just, you know, we're kind of less likely to have health problems. So we get some better rates by simply being health conscious and being aware of our bodies and running and taking care of our health. And you know, studies have shown that, I mean, up to even like 30% lower mortality rates for runners than the general population. So, you know, maybe we can save a few bucks on our life insurance. And that's what Health IQ does. So if you want to find out more information, get a quote, all that kind of good stuff, head over to healthiq.com/dizruns. That way they know that it came from here. And, you know, that, and then you can find out if they have a policy, a term, conditions that might be right for you. So healthiq.com/dizruns. Thank you for supporting today's episode of the show. So, Mark, the writing side of your life, I mean, we touched a little bit on the running history and kind of how you got into that. How did you get into writing? Was that always a passion of yours, or was that kind of a something that you fell into along the way?
How do you get into writing, right?
Yes, writing.
Yeah. Well, that was less accidental, I guess. I don't know. I mean, if you go back far enough, I've always been kind of a creative person, I guess. Even when I was a tiny kid, I was always, I actually started out kind of in the same way that I started out cycling and got into running. I started out drawing, I guess, creatively. I was always drawing little cartoons and pictures and things to the point where I would get in trouble at school for it. But yeah, and then I just sort of, I think probably in high school, I kind of shifted more into writing, and that all started with the high school newspaper, which, as an aside, if I could just digress for a moment, I guess this is not much of a digression, because I wrote a piece for Runner's World, a feature article that appeared over the summer, I guess, and it involved basically returning to my hometown, this small town in South Central Ohio, pretty rural place. And just kind of like retracing my steps and like getting back to where I became a runner, basically. You know, I caught up with that mentor figure, Denny, that I mentioned earlier. I tracked him down and chatted with him and caught up. I went back to my old high school, and you know, there was some personal, you know, and family stuff kind of woven in there as well, which was part of my story becoming a cyclist and then a runner as well. So it all kind of like intertwined in this weird way. But the point is, like, so I went back to write this story, to report the story anyway, 2 summers ago. And when I went back to my old high school, I was really saddened, kind of dismayed to learn that they had done away with the school newspaper. There was no more journalism class, no more school paper. And I thought, that's the worst thing I've heard in a long time. What an unfortunate thing for the kids there today, because for me, the high school paper is where it all started. I mean, if we hadn't had a school paper that I could have, you know, found and latched onto, and you know, I made great friends there. I hooked up with another kind of father figure mentor type person who was the journalism teacher at the time. I can say with a high degree of confidence that I wouldn't be where I am today. On any level, basically. I mean, the school paper was kind of like where it all began for me. So yeah, I started writing columns for the high school newspaper and doing some cartooning and stuff for them. And like I said, kind of in a parallel sense with cycling and running, I realized like, hey, I'm kind of better at writing than I'm at drawing, if I'm being honest with myself. And it just kind of took off from there. So, you know, I mean, you can draw a pretty clear line from my high school newspaper to my deciding to major in journalism in college. And from that to getting a newspaper job, a couple newspaper jobs actually. And with that led in an indirect way to a job at Rodale Inc., which was then called Rodale Press still, in Eastern Pennsylvania. And, you know, like I said before, you know, the rest is history.
Right.
So, you know, it was this crazy, like, you know, dotted line of serendipity, I guess, but it all started probably with the high school newspaper for sure.
Wow. That's a great story. And definitely looking, you know, we encourage people to check out that article in Runner's World if they haven't done so already, because I'm sure it's a good story to kind of, as you're going back and kind of reliving some of those.
I got a good response. It's so if you want to find it online, another shameless plug. So the headline in the print magazine was called Running Home, I believe. Online, they switched the headline to "Did Running Save My Life?" ? So you can find it on runnersworld.com under there.
Gotcha. And we'll definitely make sure to link that into the show notes as well if people want to check it out. Make it real easy for people to find. So
thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. And so running or writing has long been part of kind of the plan, a passion, something you've enjoyed doing, and obviously made it a big part of your life as well professionally. With the books, you know, some of the topics on Dumb Runner with some, you know, the Ramey's World column that was for so long part of runnersworld.com and the magazine and whatnot, you know, all kind of have a theme in that they're fairly lighthearted, not super technical. Every once in a while you write a more technical article, but for the most part, a lot of the columns and stuff are much more lighthearted. Is there a reason behind that, or is that just kind of your nature, or what drew you to more of the fun side of writing than maybe the more technical detailed side of writing that some authors and columnists are more, you know, likely to go down that route?
Right. That's a good question. Well, for one thing, it was never a conscious thing for me. That's just kind of my default mode, you know, I think. You know, I've just always been kind of a wise ass, if I'm allowed to say that, on the podcast. Kind of a wise ass and kind of a, honestly, kind of a contrarian as well. So I think it's probably not much of a stretch to suggest that part of the reason, at least, that I decided to go that route, the kind of humorous or satirical or tongue-in-cheek approach to writing about running, is because I looked at the running media landscape, I guess, the publications and books and, you know, later the, you know, websites and blogs and everything else. And it was overwhelmingly serious with a capital S, you know what I mean? It was very earnest, often pretty dry. So if, you know, it was a lot of nuts and bolts kind of stuff. And again, to be honest, a lot of prescriptive stuff as well, you know, like telling people what to eat and how to train and what not to eat and how not to train and all this other stuff. So it seemed to me that there was this, you know, that there was no shortage of voices out there, and it's still the same way. There's no shortage of voices out there who can, inform you about things like nutrition and training and gear and all those things. And by the way, I should add at this point, I don't mean to disparage those voices or those topics. So that's all important stuff. And you got to, you know, even I will acknowledge readily that you got to know, you know, what to eat and what not to. You can't just completely ignore and eat garbage all the time. Of course not. And yeah, there are training principles that you would do well to follow and so on and so forth. But, you know, my larger point is that there didn't seem much of a need that I could fill, you know, when it came to adding, you know, another voice to that chorus, that existing chorus. I feel like I know a decent amount about that kind of stuff, just if nothing else, just through osmosis for being around for so long. And as you said, I've written on those topics here and there over the years, and I've certainly chatted with a bunch of very smart people who do understand those things super well. And I've always enjoyed talking to them and stuff. But as far as, like, you know, when I came time to choose what I want to write about, how I want to write about it, I decided to go kind of a contrarian route, a different route, and poke a little fun here and there, or tell people that, you know, you don't have to take this quite so seriously all the time. It's okay to laugh, and so on and so forth. So that's just kind of what I did. But mostly, I mean, the unglamorous, boring answer is just that's just how my brain works, basically. There's not a lot of there's not a lot of pretense in the stuff I write. Here's what you get when it comes to, I mean, if you ever met me in real life, I think you'd realize pretty quickly, for better or for worse, like, yeah, that's pretty much what I expected you would sound like or be like or behave like.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Maybe this is more of the same type of answer, but where do the topics come from? You know, with the books, I mean, right, you know, who would have the audacity to write? This is the, you know, who says, I don't like being told that I need to do this, I need to do that, and then you're going to write a book called The Runner's Rule Book, or, you know, you know, some of the articles on Dumb Runner, like, they're just, they're, I feel like they're the kind of things that, I sit around, you know, after a long run at the coffee shop or after a pub run with my friends and we're having a beer or whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, the 11 dumbest running jokes that I've ever heard before. And we rattle them off. And then, you know, lo and behold, that's an article on the website. Like, you know, where do the ideas come from? And then where, you know, like, well, we'll start there. But I mean, did you ever just kick an idea around and be like, that's so stupid, but then you write it and it gets a great response?
I wouldn't say that. I am surprised more often than I'd like, I guess, at how people react to different things I write. I sometimes the things I'm most excited about that I think are the most clever, or the funniest, or the most incisive, the most biting kind of satire, will kind of land with a thud. And other stuff that I kind of think is just, like, frankly not my best work, or it's a little predictable or a little too on the nose or whatever, we'll get a huge response. And it's a mystery to me, man. I wish I understood it. But I don't. You know, I mean, all I can do is what any writer can do, I guess, which is just to keep my head down and keep cranking stuff out, and people respond to it the way they respond to it. You know, as for where the ideas come from, just a multitude of sources. I do have, so I guess broadly speaking, they come from one of two places. One is something that I have read, usually online, you know, a news article, or sometimes even a Facebook comment, or something will spark something somewhere. Or a Google News alert. You know, I'm signed up for Google News alerts for words like running and jogging and jogger and that kind of thing. So sometimes, you know, I'll get inspiration from those types of things. Other times they just kind of float into my brain from who knows where. It's funny, but, you know, one thing I've realized over time is that lately, especially, I'm getting a lot of my ideas first thing in the morning when I'm still in bed. When you're sort of in that in-between phase, you know, between, like, being asleep and being awake, you're still kind of groggy, you're still kind of, like, half dreaming sometimes, you know, for whatever reason, there's this like, I don't want to be pretentious to use the word like magical, but it seems like magic just because I don't understand how it works. But there's this almost magical kind of like time, this window of time where sometimes things will just kind of, you know, like pop in your head and, oh, that's an idea and I should write that down before I forget it. So I do, and then I get up and brush my teeth. You know, often I'll get ideas while I'm out running, actually, which sounds kind of hokey, but it's completely true. And I guess not that surprising when you think about your own runs and how your brain kind of opens up quite often. When you're running, you know, things just have a way of working themselves out on a run, whether you mean them to or not, which is nice. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where I think for somebody like me, who's maybe not quite as creative, it's hard to imagine coming up with all these creative ideas. But like you said, you just keep your head down, you keep working and maybe, you know, maybe it's just like a muscle where you've trained it enough that you're looking, you know, you're looking in the right places. You're seeing things that somebody like myself doesn't, and then you can take it and run with it. And it becomes an article, or it becomes a quote somewhere, or it becomes something that to me is just kind of like, oh yeah, all right, whatever. But you know, it's just funny or interesting to me how different minds work and whatnot.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that because I do believe strongly that there's some element to this kind of thing that you can control. I mean, you do need to. It takes time and diligence, but you know, you can train yourself to recognize these things. You know, back during part of my time at Runner's World, I was in charge of the website editorially. And I used to tell people all the time in meetings or just one-on-one chats or whatever, like, you know, ideas for blog posts or online articles or whatever, that these ideas are all around you. They're in the air. You just have to be able to recognize them and sort of reach up and grab them, you know, because often, you know, we'd be chatting in a meeting or whatever, maybe on a run sometimes, and somebody would mention something they had heard or read recently. And, you know, we would kind of like chat about it and laugh about it. And they would say something kind of funny or insightful about it. And then it would kind of like fade, you know, especially if we were running, you'd almost like see it fading into the background behind us as we ran. And I would sometimes stop and say like, dude, that's a blog post. Like what you just said, that's a headline for a blog post. Go and, you know, bang something out and do it. But so yeah, I think we're all surrounded by the same ideas. It's just that, you need to cultivate this awareness, I guess, of them, and to be able to recognize them as ideas, as seeds, you know, that can grow into something before they completely vanish, for sure. Yeah.
With that in mind, then, what was the genesis to cause you to plant the seed that grew into dumbrunner.com?
Gosh, you know, I think it was just, well, in the back of my head, I think I'd been thinking for years about launching my own thing online, but I hadn't for whatever reason or reasons. And around the time I launched it, I had, well, to back up, so I was at Runner's World on staff, like they're physically, you know, at their headquarters in Pennsylvania. From 2007 through like mid 2014, and in mid 2014, my family and I kind of pulled up stakes and moved out here to Portland, Oregon, which is where we live today. And when that happened, I maintained my relationship with Runner's World, but as a contractor, basically. So I was, you know, doing XYZ for them contractually, but not getting benefits, basically. it's just the hard truth. So I was a freelancer, a contractor for them. And then, you know, a year and a half or so into that, I decided to end my online column with them, Rainy's World, because I've been doing it for like 7.5 years, and I definitely gotten burned out on that. So I decided, you know, I'm going to stop doing the online column and try to think of other ways to, you know, spend my energy. So, you know, after a short transition, we ended the online column. So I continue to contribute a print column for them, which is also called Randy's World, which I find a little confusing because the print column is not nearly as funny or wacky as the online column was, but there you have it. So I'm still doing some for the print magazine. But all of a sudden I had this big chunk of time freed up. And to be honest, especially looking back now with some better perspective on things, like I said, I've been doing that online column for 7.5 years for them. And over that time, I definitely trained my brain to work in that way we just discussed, right? Where you're always kind of scanning, often unconsciously, I think, for ideas and things that might make a good blog post or whatever. So, you know, that part of my brain didn't switch off when the column did. You know, it was my brain was still working that way, and I had this free time all of a sudden, and I was somehow being physically removed from the magazine, I think, contributed to this sense that I'm independent now. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm still contributing to Runner's World, I'm my own person, my own entity, and I had this kind of freedom. So it was this kind of like crazy intersection of events, circumstances that just made me think like, you know, if I'm going to launch something, probably the time to do it is now. So I just did. And that was about a little over 2 years ago now. So it's been 2 years.
Gotcha. And one of the things that I saw on the website when I was kind of poking around on it, several times I've poked around on it, and I keep coming back to the Dumb Runner Manifesto. And you say there on the website, at Dumb Runner, we don't believe in mission statements, but we do believe in manifestos and promises. And then you've got three things that are real simple. Running should be simple, period. That's number one of the manifesto. Number two, there is beauty in every run if you take the time to look. Music too, if you listen for it. And then number three, laughter is good. So is pie. More of both, please. Where did those three? I feel like kind of number one we kind of covered already a little bit with sure, the article from a while back, the three things you need to know about running. But where did those manifesto points kind of come from?
Oh boy, I think I just took some time to really think about what it was I wanted to accomplish with the website. I didn't want it to be purely a gag, even though that's overwhelmingly what it is today. And by that, I mean just kind of jokey and satirical and humorous, or lighthearted, for lack of a better word. I wanted it to be a place, too, where I reinforced this notion that running should be simple, that it doesn't have to be complicated, that it shouldn't be complicated, actually. And that, you know, despite the jokiness and the laughs that I have and encourage others to have, running is a beautiful thing. You know, there's this joyous aspect to it. And I wanted to remind myself more than anyone, you know, that was the case. I mean, I think this manifesto, I kind of did it for the benefit of readers, especially newcomers to the site, to kind of like see what we're all about and what it is I'm trying to convey here. But more than anything, I think it was for my own benefit as well, you know, to remind myself, like, why am I doing this and what do I believe? Like, well, this is what I believe. I believe running should be simple. I think there's beauty in every run, even the ugly ones, you know, but you need to open your eyes and look for it. You know, it can be beautiful and joyous and lyrical and all these wonderful things. And that's easy to forget too. You know, I mean, it's easy to forget that running should be simple. It's easy to forget that there's beauty in every run, you know, especially if you're having a bad day or if you're, cold or hurting or whatever. Like, this isn't beautiful. This sucks. But even in those moments, there's beauty. You know, these things are things that are worth reminding ourselves of, I think. And the third and final one about laughter and pie, I think, speak for themselves, because who doesn't love laughter and a nice slice of pie? You know, I mean, we could do with more of both. And by the way, the more I think about it too, the more I keep hammering home that third and final point about laughter and pi. And by the way, I'm using pi here and elsewhere. Pi is a big thing with me. I kind of use pi on a couple levels, not to get too philosophical here, but you know, when I celebrate pi and encourage people to have some pi and love pi and enjoy it, I mean it for the obvious superficial reasons, because it's delicious and buttery flaky crust is good, and you know, and you should just enjoy it. It's this great sensuous thing. But also in the sense, for me, pi represents anything in life that just brings you a little bit of joy in an otherwise dark time, that doesn't necessarily sustain you physically, or like it doesn't, you know, most pi doesn't have a lot of nutrients and not a lot of nutritive value. You know, people who are really rigid about their diets might be horrified at the idea of eating a big slice of pie with buttery crusts and delicious fruit filling and all that other gooey stuff. But you know, I think it's worth keeping in mind that, you know, we can and should carve out times for things that are just good that we can enjoy in the moment. You know, I think it's worthwhile. And you know, 2 years on, especially since when I wrote this, you know, the world, I'm treading carefully at this point, because I don't want to get political or weird or even heavy right now. But man, anybody I think would have to admit that the world today looks a lot different than it did 2 years ago at this time. Mm-hmm. And let me just say that today more than ever, I believe more firmly than ever that laughter is not just good; it's necessary. You know. Pie too, but especially laughter. If I didn't have laughter, I don't know,
right,
how I'd cope sometimes. So
yeah,
so, I that's what it's all about.
Good. Yeah, I'm a big fan of laughing a little bit as well, and definitely, you know, all the things that you've got going on in the books, the website, it definitely puts a smile on the face, even when it's a little bit of a Debbie Downer kind of day. And again, no matter where which side you're coming from or whatever, like you said, it's the world's a different place and it's constantly changing. And hopefully one of these days it might, you know, some days it changes good, some days it changes bad, but it is what it is. But got to ask the final little follow-up question here.
Yeah.
Favorite type of pie. What is it? If there's only one slice out there, what's the best type to have?
Free. That's a glib answer. That's a cop out. I've gotten that question a lot, and you would think at this point I would have developed a pat quick response to it, and I still haven't. Because it's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have a favorite race distance, which is the half marathon. Mm-hmm. As we discussed earlier, I have a really hard time choosing a least favorite or one that I really dislike. Pie is similar in the sense that I have a hard time choosing one that I dislike or, you know, one that I like the least. Mm-hmm. I'm not big into nuts or peanut butter. So like any peanut butter kind of pie is no good for me, or pecan pie is really not high on my list, you know, but otherwise I'm pretty neutral. I'm Switzerland when it comes to pies. I love and welcome all pies into my mouth.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I would say that I do have a favorite. There's nothing better than a good apple pie, but you know, my number two favorite is the free one as well. All of the above are the second favorite. So
I do have a soft spot for apple, I must admit, probably because my grandmother made these beautiful, like mind-bogglingly good apple pies when I was growing up, and they were pretty special. So if I put a gun to my head, I would probably say apple.
But, yeah. Definitely. And that's the same reason for me too. My mom and her family, you know, grew up owning an apple orchard. And so that was a big deal. Was anytime there was a family gathering, Nana made the pie, and it was always apple pie. There was no other type of pie at that side of the family. That was it. So it's a special place in my heart as well. So, in wrapping up today, Mark, the last of, I promise this will actually be the last one this time, but, one thing that's new, at least since episode one, I don't remember exactly when I picked this up, but it wasn't when we first talked, But I'd like to end with a kind of a philosophical-ish type of question. Just meaning that it's very open-ended, very, you know, you can answer it in one or two words. You can answer it in 5 or 10 minutes, you know, kind of however the spirit moves you to answer just a pretty simple question, kind of like the original question, the favorite race distance. And I'd just be curious, you know, at this point in your life, what is the number one or number two reason? What are the couple of reasons that running is still such a part of your life? I mean, you've done a lot, you've ran a lot of races, lots of miles, written a lot of articles. Obviously, you know, I mean, running is essential to your life as probably just about anything else. Why keep picking them up and putting them down on such a regular basis?
I can answer that in one word: sanity.
That's perfect. And that's what I love, the philosophical, because it can be short and sweet. It can be long and drawn out and everything in between. So I think a lot of people would agree with you that a little bit of sanity comes with a few miles on a regular basis. So so that is where we'll wrap it up then. Guys, again, dumbrunner.com is the website. Check it out. If you need a laugh, if you need a piece of a little nugget of satirical pie, what's metaphorical pie? That's the word I was looking for. Dumbrunner.com is the place to go. On the Twitter at Real Dumb Runner, Facebook.com/Dumb Runner, and Dizruns.com/500 to check out the show notes for this episode. Links to some articles, and maybe we'll even link back to the original episode when I was, like I said at the beginning, pretty much a train wreck on the interview side of things. But hopefully I've gotten a little bit better in the last 3+ years. So anyway, Mark, thank you again for taking the time today. Thanks for giving me a shot 3.5 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long. And thanks for coming back today. It's been a pleasure catching up, and certainly looking forward to continue to follow along with what you're doing. And who knows, maybe we'll do this again sometime and not wait another 500 episodes to do it.
All right. Well, it was, you're welcome. It was my pleasure, and thanks for having me again.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of the show. Hopefully you've listened to more than just this one, but maybe if this is your first one, actually, this isn't a bad time to jump on board, because obviously 500 episodes ago, or 499 episodes ago, I talked to Mark, and here we are back again, 499 episodes later, catching back up. And I hope that you enjoyed this one. I know I did. It was cool to kind of line this up and make sure that this happened on episode 500. So it wasn't an accident. It was definitely intentional. But thanks to Mark for taking the time, and thank you for joining us on the conversation today. I hope that you enjoyed it. And as per usual, we might be 500 episodes in, but some things aren't changing. And this is one of them. I want to know your takeaway. What stood out to you from today's episode? What was something that we talked about that made you go, huh? You know, made you stop and think a little bit. What was it today? For me, it really is something that I think maybe I've thought about before, maybe even talked about before. But every once in a while, it's good to get a reminder, right? It's good to have something pop back, refresh, pop it back up onto your awareness charts. And that is the idea of don't overthink things. Keep it simple. Our sport really is, I don't want to say it's basic, but we tend to overcomplicate things. How's that for a good way of saying it? And I'm as guilty of this as anybody, okay? I know that I can overcomplicate things a little bit for myself. I can probably overcomplicate things a little bit for my clients sometimes. And with how much I love to just yak and yak and yak, maybe I can overcomplicate things for you guys listening to things sometimes, for some of the quick tips and the Q&A episodes, things like that. When it all comes down to it, keep things simple. Don't overthink things. You know, yes, it's nice to have extra things. It's nice to have a good watch. It's nice to have, you know, the fueling things, or the this and the that, and all the extras, all the things that a lot of us have. But we don't need all of those things. So if something happens, if you forget something, if it's not working, if you don't have it, it's not the end of the world, all right? You can still get out there and run without your headphones. You can still get out there and run without your Garmin once in a while. You can still get out there and run without your chews or your gels or your Tailwind or your whatever. All right. Those things are nice to have. They're creature comforts that I certainly partake in most situations. But we don't need to overthink things. Keep it simple. Make it fun. You know, if all else fails, this should be fun for all of us. It should be fun. So keep it fun. Keep it simple. Just get out there and do it. And do it. And enjoy yourself. And that was my takeaway. And it's, again, it's always something like that just sticks out in my mind. And I go, oh, yeah, maybe I've been overcomplicating things a little bit lately. And I just need to dial it back and just have fun. And that's one thing that I'm working on doing. So that's probably why it stood out to me, but I'd love to know what stood out to you. Could have been that. Could have been anything else we talked about today. Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And as always, you can head over to the show notes for links and to leave comments and feedback and takeaways there as well. And once again, the link for today's show notes, DizRuns.com/500. We made it. Made it to 500,000. I don't know why that matters, because we're going to keep going past 1,000 too. But onward and upward, folks. We got 500 down, and who knows how many more to go. But I'm going to go ahead and put my money on more than 500 more to go. So we're going to keep trucking. If y'all want to keep listening, I would appreciate that. And if not, whatever. I'm going to keep trucking anyway. So, you know, hopefully y'all come along for the ride with me. But that wraps it up for today. Once again, healthiq.com/DizRuns if you want to check out some life insurance quotes and support the show in so doing. Just checking out their website, their information, getting a quote. It shows them that that their advertising dollars are well spent, and it keeps those types of things coming, which allows me to keep doing more and more things for y'all as well. So everybody wins, right? Everybody wins. That's the idea when it comes to getting sponsors. So thanks to Health IQ, and thank you guys for supporting all of the sponsors that we have here on the show. And with that, let's put a bow on this thing. Episode 500, thanks for coming along. Whether I know there's a few of you that you've literally listened to all 500 episodes. There's a select few that started on episode one. I can't remember everybody, but I feel like I know that Andy is one of them. I know that Stephen would have been. I'm pretty sure Stephen would have been if he was still around. Whatever the situation, whether you've listened to one episode, 500 episodes, somewhere in between, thank you guys. Thank you so much for continuing to go on this journey with me, to go along for the ride, to take me with you on your runs. I just appreciate it. I appreciate it, and I appreciate y'all. So, like I said, I've no plans on slowing down, no plans on stopping. I'm going to keep going. Hope y'all will keep coming with me. But until next time, please be well. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk soon, guys. Take care.